Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Out of My Mind podcast. This is Keith Crosby, your host, where we take a look at the crazy world around us and an increasingly dark world around us through the lens of Scripture. That is a biblical worldview. And today I want to talk about the left's culture of violence. The left's culture of violence. That's progressives, that's Democrats, that's the left. Now, of course, these are the people that say they abhor violence and they condemn all political violence. But do their actions line up with their words? Do their words line up with their actions? Do their words line up with their words? I'm reminded that it says in the book of Matthew, chapter 7, verses 15 to 20, you will recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. And a healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a diseased tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, you will recognize them by their fruits. Matthew 7, verses 15 to 20. What's the point? The point is actions speak louder than words. And as believers, as we survey the cultural and political landscape around us, we are driven to the conclusion that perhaps the left is increasingly violent, and it is not the group of tolerance. It is not the group of forbearance. It is increasingly violent. And let me explain what I mean. Charlie Kirk's murder reveals the left's culture of violence. The murder of Charlie Kirk is telling. Let me read you a brief excerpt from an article that I just recently came across. The murder of Charlie Kirk at the hands of a leftist gunman has revealed that many, many more Americans, even people elsewhere around the world, supported Charlie and his views more than was commonly appreciated. New Zealanders in London danced the haka at his honor. Crowds all over the United States gathered, as well as in Rome, London, and Germany and Israel. Charlie's views, uniformly disparaged by the press as far right, are in fact mainstream, held by the majority of people. His assassination has caused people to step forward and realize that the normal American community is a huge majority. But something else is being revealed, which is just how awful the views of the other 20% are. The approving response of the assassination from so many otherwise apparently respectable people has demonstrated just how many people there are who adhere to a leftist ideology of hate. This is not a fringe group anymore. Tape after tape, view after view, federal workers, bureaucrats, educators, professors, nurses, people celebrating and cheering the assassination of Charlie Kirk indicate there is a domestic terrorist movement growing in the country. These aren't just a few wackos. These are large numbers of people in professional and managerial jobs, mostly government employees of some sort, it seems, who genuinely believe that holding ideas they don't like should carry the death penalty. The quote continues, "These people are everywhere. They might be teaching your kids. They might be the face looking down at you when you are wheeled into the ER. They might be the guy who approves your building permit or not. It's an army of haters." For better or worse, Trump is the great clarifier. Here's another thing that's become clear in his second term. They're there. They hate you. They're not going anywhere. So what to do about it? Now, I have to admit, when I first read this quote, I had to ask myself the question, is this true? Is this true? Or is this an exaggeration? And as I've done a deep dive into this, I've come to the conclusion that this is no exaggeration. This is true. Now, of course, in the wake of Charlie Kirk's murder, we heard a great deal about both sides needing to tone down the rhetoric. But is this really so? Both sides? 20% of progressive Democrats say killing a political opponent is acceptable. 7% of people on the right say that. But you can't help but notice the ratio on the left is 3 times that of the right. That's 300%. Now, 7% is too much on the right. But let's put this in perspective. There's something awry on the left. And we certainly don't want to fall into the trap of playing false equivalencies. Yeah, well, your side does it too. No, 7% versus 20% is a significant difference. Does the left have a problem? Well, you can tell by the fruit they bear. As we read a moment ago, you will recognize them by their fruit. Recently, Senator Chuck Schumer decried acts of violence, but did he mean it? I mean, everyone decries acts of violence, at least publicly. But can I ask you a serious question? How many mass shootings have been carried out by conservatives, Republicans, or even independents? How many mass shootings, riots, political assassinations have been carried out by the right in the last 5 years? Now, I've heard pundits on the left call Charlie Kirk a racist, a homophobe, transphobic, and a fascist. He's been accused of hate speech. Like Donald Trump, he was characterized as an existential threat to society. Yet there's no example online, in public, or in his writings of a single instance of Kirk saying anything racist. But the left has a nasty habit of labeling people, of stretching definitions. And so if you challenge the homosexual agenda, you're a homophobe. If you challenge the transgender agenda or the ideology, you're a transphobe. If you're against affirmative action, which is in effect reverse discrimination, you're a racist. And these things just aren't true. And Charlie Kirk's clips are all over the internet, and you won't find him doing anything remotely like the left describes. But now he's dead, assassinated, murdered. Why? His alleged killer said that he was spreading hate. That's a big term, too, that the left uses, spreading hate. That means questioning the status quo most of the time. What hate was Charlie spreading? Often, people accuse others of the things that they do. That's called projection. And the left is notorious for projection. So what I'd like to do is walk you through a brief survey of the murder culture, the violence culture of the American left. Let's start with Donald Trump's first term as presidency. Novels and movies about his assassination came out. Some call it political porn. They were published by the progressive left. One book that drew attention was The Assassination of President Donald Trump. In 2018, it was a political thriller, a novel by Mark Shapiro. In it, a Russian operative assassinates Donald Trump with the help of a Secret Service agent. It stirred controversy for portraying the murder of a sitting president, even though it was presented as fiction. But that's really not new. Similar works were written about George Bush. He was called a Nazi and things like that. And so there was a film presented where George Bush is murdered during a visit to Chicago in 2007. The movie presented a mixture of news footage, computer effects, staged interviews to create a what-if scenario. It premiered at the Toronto Film Festival and caused significant controversy because it depicted the killing of a sitting American president. Can you imagine if someone had done that about Biden or Obama? But once again, don't think the demonization of Donald Trump is something new. The Democratic Party chair of South Carolina in 2014 compared Nikki Haley, the then governor of South Carolina, a Republican and a person of color, to Eva Braun, Hitler's mistress. In 2012, the so-called dean of the Kansas Democratic delegation to the Democratic National Convention compared Republican policy proposal to Nazi tactics. This inflammatory language contributes to this mood of violence. Obama insider and campaign official David Axelrod ascribed Nazi terminology to the Republican candidate Mitt Romney, who was a liberal Republican. He had been the governor of a blue state, Massachusetts, and he was anything but conservative and anything like a Nazi. But this is the language of violence of the left. It's the kind of language and imagery that promotes violence. They tend to dehumanize people with whom they disagree. Hillary Clinton in 2016 characterized half of Donald Trump's supporters as racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, and she called them deplorables. That's demonizing 25% of the U.S. population. Joe Biden called Trump supporters chumps. Then he tried to backtrack what he said and to refer to hecklers at one campaign stop. In May of 2017, comedian Kathy Griffin posted a photo of her where she appeared to be holding the bloodied, severed head of President Donald Trump. Progressive entertainer Madonna said someone should bomb the White House. A Bernie Sanders supporter shot up a Republican congressional baseball practice in 2017. James Hodgson, on June 14, 2017, carried out an attack on a Republican congressional baseball practice in Alexandria, Virginia. Before the shooting, Hodgson asked a bystander whether the team on the field was Democrat or Republican. When he was told they were Republicans, he walked back to his van, retrieved his rifle, and began firing, nearly killing Congressman Steve Scalise. It is said that Hodgson was agitated by Democratic rhetoric about Republicans destroying Medicare and Social Security. Does that sound familiar? Destroying Medicare and Social Security? Threatening the well-being of people there? Then you have media pundits on MSNBC or CNN describing those whom disagree with the Democrats as Nazis, fascists, existential threats to democracy and national well-being. You know, I mentioned Chuck Schumer earlier at the top of the podcast calling for people to tone down the rhetoric, but Schumer is one of the worst offenders. It was Chuck Schumer who publicly threatened members of the U.S. Supreme Court as they were about to deliberate for the Dobbs decision on abortion. I'll let him speak for himself.
And they're taking away fundamental rights. I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price.
Here you have an example of the language of violence. Shortly after this, protesters showed up at the homes of Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and others. They were doxxed. Their addresses were given away. Activists showed up. The police barely protected their houses. They requested security from the Biden administration. They were denied that security by the Biden administration. And this kind of rhetoric continued. Ultimately, a man named Nicholas John Roski was arrested near the home of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, carrying a gun, a knife, zip ties, and other gear. He confessed that he intended to harm the justice, and the progressives' rhetoric continued, calling Donald Trump a threat to democracy, an existential threat to America, a threat to everyone, good and just. And what happened? Let's not forget the assassination attempts, plural, on his life. After the assassination attempt at Butler, Joe Biden, in a moment of cognitive clarity, demanded the temperature of political rhetoric be toned down. Vice President Harris agreed. Yet before long, White House surrogates described Donald Trump's return to power as a continuing existential threat. White House aides stated publicly another Trump term is a threat to democracy, according to ABC News. And I've dealt with the violence and the city burnings of places like Seattle, Portland, Kenosha, the Twin Cities by progressive activists. But as we've seen, progressive violence isn't limited to government officials, is it? We just experienced the murder of Charlie Kirk. But before that, remember the murder of a healthcare CEO by Luigi Mangione. Maybe you remember that murder. People fawned over him because he was so good looking, because he had good abs. There was a saying that if the guy is fit, you must acquit. Somebody else remarked he's even hotter with his mask and shirt off. It didn't take the left long to label Mangione as the hot assassin. Mangione said he murdered this man as a symbol of political protest. His manifesto and online presence made this clear. Yet there were hashtags on the left, Free Luigi. California legislators named legislation after this murderer. Legacy media pundits and commentators on the left said things like, it was wrong to kill him, but we can understand why he did it. You can understand why he killed a man who he didn't know by shooting him in the back, a family man, by taking his life because of what? Because of some difference in policy or practice that he perceived by big healthcare corporations? You can understand why he murdered this man? I can't. But that's the progressive left and its violence. It rationalizes things. It initially says, oh, this is wrong, but. They do the classic yes buts, or they do moral equivalencies where there is no moral equivalence. They lack morality. For them, the ends justify the means. The left is violent. They indoctrinate violence. They spread violence through their hateful speech. They label everybody else as hate speech, but hate speech is their hallmark. Let me give you an example. And this example has to do with the indoctrination of small children. I want you to listen to this. This is an audio clip from a video that was posted online by a member of Taylor Swift's entourage, and she's telling her young children, like 6 and 8, guess what the good news is, and listen to what the children say. And as you listen to what the children say, where do you think they got this from? Their parents.
I have the best news ever.
What? Donald Trump died?
Second best news.
The vice president died?
Okay, third best news.
That Elon Musk died?
Okay, no. Nobody died. My best friend's getting married.
Which one is it?
Taylor Swift!
Let's listen to that again. Again, where do you think these children get these ideas from? And how can children hold such ideas? Listen to the clip.
I have the best news ever.
What? Donald Trump died?
Second best news.
Third best news. That Elon Musk died?
No. Nobody died. My best friend's getting married.
Which one is it?
Taylor Swift!
And it's this kind of hateful language, this type of language of violence, language of death, language of murder, wishing your opponents dead, that permeates the progressive left and much of the Democratic Party and much of the news media. And as we see here with this Taylor Swift friend, much of the culture, the media, the music industry, Hollywood. Children are being indoctrinated with hate on the progressive left. If you missed the previous podcast about the violent history of progressivism from the French Revolution to the Russian Revolution to China and to Cambodia, the progressive left always tries to build some sort of utopia. And when they cannot convince people of their position, they resort uniformly, historically, to violence. And that's what we are seeing today. We're seeing inflammatory language by politicians, by journalists, and they are triggering people to act violently. That way they have plausible deniability. But what we've seen with the Charlie Kirk murder is they are celebrating openly in many cases. And these people are not crazy white women in their 60s with purple and blue hair. They are doctors and lawyers and government officials and all kinds of people. They are not fringe people. They are becoming the mainstream on the progressive left. And there is no comparison or moral equivalency. Let me ask you a question. How many cities have been burned since the murder of Charlie Kirk? How many riots have there been since the murder of Charlie Kirk? Compare that to what went on in Portland and Seattle and Kenosha and Chicago and Atlanta with the so-called murder of George Floyd. It is the left that is violent because it cannot sell its ideas. Most people reject the ideas, whether it's transgenderism or homosexual curriculum in our schools or whatever their cause du jour is. When they cannot win a reasoned argument, they resort to bullets, fists, and bats. A recently released national poll indicated, and this includes Democrats, 55% affirm that it would be acceptable to assassinate Donald Trump. 48% believe it would be acceptable to assassinate Elon Musk. And if you don't take those numbers seriously, remember the two clips I played, the one back-to-back of these children under 10 thinking the murder of Donald Trump or the death of J.D. Vance or Elon Musk would be good things, good news. That's the way their parents have trained them. And they will grow up to propagate this philosophy of violence. The left has a problem, a hate problem. They spread hate. They spread violent speech. They commit acts of violence at multiples of the rate that the so-called right does. And they can talk about the need to tone down the language all they want. But at the end, we'll know this. You will recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. Thus you will recognize them by their fruits. And if you want to see their fruits, spend some time on TikTok, Facebook, or any other social media where people are celebrating the murder of Charlie. The left is celebrating his murder. They are trying to rationalize it, justify it, because they are a party of violence. and their calls for peace or turning down the heat of the rhetoric cannot be taken seriously until they demonstrate a repentance of their own by reversing course and disavowing those who practice hateful, violent rhetoric, which trigger mentally ill transgendered people and the like to do terrible things, as we saw with Charlie Kirk. Listen to the language of the violent left. Listen again to Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer, who has called for toning down the language.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price.
And listen to those people howl like banshees. Now listen to these little girls, and you can find many more examples online if you like.
I have the best news ever.
What? Donald Trump died?
Second best news.
The vice president died?
Okay, third best news.
That Elon Musk died?
Okay, no. Nobody died. My best friend's getting married.
Which one is it?
Taylor Swift!
Now, as Christians, as believers, what can we do about this? It's up to God to change the hearts of evil men and women. But you can commit yourself to prayer for the heart and soul of the nation, for the heart and souls of individuals like these. You can pray that God would confound the plans of wicked men and women abroad and at home. Of course, you can vote your conscience. You can model the type of language that you would like to see them imitate. You don't want to stoop to their level. You don't want to return evil for evil, but overcome evil with good. It seems like a daunting task, but it is one that you must be up to, Christian. Otherwise, you become like those on the left. And in the end, remember this. This is not about winning a political argument. This is a matter of worldview, of our Christian worldview, of being salt and light in a wicked and adulterous generation. And you have a role to play. Rather than act like them, do not be conformed to this world, but have your mind transformed and be a transforming agent in this fallen, hurting world. As we try to fulfill the Great Commission, go to all nations, making disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to do all that Christ commanded. That's what your calling is. Your calling isn't to win an argument, but to win a soul. Keep that in mind in the days ahead. There's going to be some dark days ahead, lots of political upheaval, lots of wicked and evil talk. Remember how you come across online. That's your witness. That's your testimony. And that is permanent. So act like a Christian, not like a wicked leftist. Well, I think I've said enough for now. Thank you for listening. This is Keith Crosby signing off. May God bless you and God keep you.